Time to take a look at your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar, our personal computer consultant out of Madison. Pete's been with us for a long time, comes by once a month to give you some advice about what may or may not be vexing you regarding your computer or its software. Certainly, if you have a question, join on in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And if your computer is working, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
I read a little note here that before the show that nearly two-thirds of parents worry about kids participating in online communities. What do you do to control access?
Boy, that's a tough one. And what you have to do is really have the stiff arm to reel them in and provide access to the computer in a more public area. I think I've told this story a few times as related to my son where he wanted his computer in his room, which was downstairs. And I said, that's not going to happen. And he said, why? And I said, well, you're going to basically vanish and I'm not going to be able to see you.
Yeah.
Aside from, you know, not telling him that I can't observe what's going on. And he never questioned it after that. And we had a separate computer room, which I had access to, could walk in any time I wanted. And,
now,
you know, everything
that's really
was plain
the way to
see.
Do it.
I mean, that in itself is key. Once you relinquish your rights to, you know, they got a computer in their room, boy, that's, you know, it's a real tug of war. There are other, if you want to call them spy tools, which then it gets dicey because yeah. then you... You know, I saw a movie last night called The Breach and where they captured not a spy, but, you know, a person who was giving up federal secrets was, you know, one of the stars had to grab the Palm Pilot, you know, and download a 35 meg file. And, you know, they're trying to delay the guy from coming back. So the suspense is, you know, are they going to come in the room? And obviously, you know, they'll be away from school and stuff like that. But there are tools that you could actually load if it's a serious concern. You know, I wouldn't do this in terms of, you know, I just want to do it for the sake of doing it. But there are tools out there, and I'm not going to name names because you just do searches and find them and look for evaluations of them, where you could essentially play the Big Brother or, you know, the spy game, where you can observe what they're doing online because it's essentially capturing their activity. And there are other things, too, where internet messaging logs and stuff like that where you can actually observe conversations. But the thing with that is you got to understand the language.
Yeah.
And, you know, that in itself it could be very time-consuming trying to identify – you know, these screen names and who they are, I've been there and it's, it's a very huge puzzle to deal with.
One of the things, we'll get right to the questions here in a minute, but had an acquaintance, someone said, hey, you ought to check out your 13-year-old daughter's Facebook. And he went online and it was, kind of embarrassing, you know, she was talking about some things that he never suspected that she might be involved in. He confronted her about it, and she said, well, I'm just putting it in there because that's what you're supposed to do when you're in.
Yeah, I've never mentioned, you know, those resources, Facebook and MySpace, because I don't validate them. I think they're, to me, even Instant Messenger to a great degree is a huge waste of time and how it's changed, you know, our interactivity, you know, amongst our culture, our younger culture, and, you know, the Facebook and the MySpace. And part of that is an act, you know, because it's your peers and you're putting this out and it's kind of like, bragging rights almost. And to me, non-productive and a huge waste of time. Observing that stuff is important. And like, you know, daughter said, you know, some of that is, you know, grain of salt kind of thing. But, you know, if things become a concern, then those are, you know, key areas of observation
that you need to look
but,
at.
You know, spelling out some rules of engagement, like, you know, these phishing things that go on, the scams, and making them aware and not trusting those kind of emails or prompts for participation. You know, putting some rules down in terms of, you know, email accounts and making sure that they give you access to it, you know, so that you know, because it is your right and they are, you know, underage. So lay some ground rules down, you know, to make sure that they're clear on those, because if they step out of bounds, you need to be able to take control. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Larry, you mentioned about passwords.
Yeah.
That's a, you know, an area where, like, financial institutions, especially banks, typically prompt you in a number of cases to change or encourage you to change it within about 60 days. As far as, you know, how long a password and what should make up a good password, Microsoft's got a password checker, you know, to let you know what it thinks of the weakness and the strength of it. But typically, what would be considered an excellent password would be something that would either be a short phrase or word that's about 14, 15 characters long, that's got at least two, if not, you know, three numbers in it, and use of upper and lower case. So, you know, if you're in the 6 to 8 range and you're using upper and lower case and numbers, it still can give you a really strong password. But they're saying, you know, taking that out to about 14 or 15, you know, adds a little bit more strength to it. So, you know, and every 60 days or so, changing it is a good habit to get into. It's not absolute, but and then also not using the same one over and over and over for everything that you do.
Yeah.
And that could be a challenge.
Yeah.
And not writing it down and leaving it in an open place so that someone can grab it, you know.
It is very, very difficult. I can tell you that. It's hard to remember them. Bill in Madison has a comment or question. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I appreciate you taking my call. And I work at a small computer repair store here in Madison, and a lot of parents come in and they ask us what we recommend for monitoring their children as far as software or just habits to, you know, partake in so that they can ensure that their kids are safe online. And what we usually recommend is just to set up their account with Windows so that it's a limited account so that they only have access to certain things. And then from there, even though that's not, you know, a huge resource or step, it's an initial step.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then from there, in your whatever browser that you use, you can also make block lists of websites that you can block so that they can't visit them. And that's something that parents can look into, too. If they don't appreciate their kids or want their kids going to, like, the MySpaces or the Facebooks or any other, you know, social sites like that, then they can put them in the block list and kids can't visit them. So
right.
That's just something to look into, too, is
yeah.
Knowing what's out there and what's got more potential for, you know, harm or concern to the children.
That's right.
Very good points, William.
And the other thing to add to that is also making sure that their system, if it's not one that you share, is definitely up to date on antivirus mm-hmm. and spyware, because I'll tell you, that stuff, you know, between music downloads and file sharing can just infiltrate a system real fast and make your head spin.
Yeah.
And then they complain and say, my computer's slow, it's broken, get me another one, please.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, William.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the input.
So he's heard those. Yep, yeah, my computer's slow, it's broken, get me another one, please.
Steve in Green Bay, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
I have Windows XP, a Dell computer that's still not very old, a year, year and a half. On the toolbar there, on the right-hand corner, when I hit the drop-down to delete, say, browsing history and get rid of cookies and so on, I click on Internet Options, and on the left-hand side of the screen, a box flashes for, you know, a fraction of a second, and I can't get at anything to delete cookies. I've run Trend Micro. Just ordered that, and I had Norton before. My computer's clean, according to both Norton and Trend Micro. What could possibly be the problem? The computer works fine otherwise.
If you go to that same area where you have Internet Options,
Uh-huh.
And there's one when you should be able to click on where it says View Files. You should be able to go to the location of where those cookies are. They usually show them when you do this.
There's no View Files.
Hmm.
The first one is Delete Browsing History, then Pop-Up Blocker, Phishing Filter, and then a various thing. And the very bottom one is Internet Options. This mm-hmm. used to work in the past.
Right.
I would click on Internet Options, and then another window would come up, and then I could make my choice as far as whatever I wanted to delete.
Right.
But that window just flashes and it's gone.
Hmm.
Is there another way to get to those cookies? Or?
Well, I know I've used a product called Internet Eraser and also Easy Cleaner, either one of those, and there are other file management tools where they'll delete temporary Internet files and they'll also, you know, specifically help you delete the cookies. You can also, if you wanted to, it's a little bit more tedious, but if you go into your user data, you would be able to essentially use Microsoft Windows Explorer, not Internet Explorer, but the Windows Explorer to locate and view the cookies on your system. So they would typically be located under, in an XP system, there would be a Documents and Settings, and then if you were just the user, it would probably either be listed with your username or the administrator. And then within that, you would continue to browse within those files, and eventually you would find the cookies. Do you follow?
Yeah.
Because they're located all together in one folder on your system. And
you
they're,
said
and,
that was...
Go ahead.
You said that was Internet Eraser?
Well, the products that I've used that I know do those effectively is Internet Eraser and...
Okay.
And also Easy Cleaner. And I have those linked under, let's see, I believe it is, on Spyware, on the InfoStar Virus Info Center page.
Okay.
There's if you look for where it says Spyware : there are links to Easy Cleaner and also iEraser. I just abbreviated it. But those, they're free downloads, mm-hmm. and they work pretty effectively and quick for doing that kind of stuff. But like I said, they're located in one folder on your system, and they're within your user information. You just have to know to get to that, and that's under the Documents and Settings, and then your username, and then you just keep – you'll browse through it, and you'll find those files.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Steve. Bill and DePere, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Yeah, my computer's developed a real annoying hum on the sound system. It seems to be related in some respects, perhaps, to the mouse. You have any ideas what it is and how to get rid of it?
Are you using anything wireless?
You have a DSL wireless, yes.
But, I mean, is the mouse wireless or any,
no,
any other?
No, it's an optical but a wired mouse.
Mm-hmm. Have you...
tried another mouse?
When you say it's related to the mouse, are you, you know, from, like, moving it around, are you getting different degrees of humming or... Okay. I'm just thinking that there might be a short, might be worth trying to switch it out and see if that makes a difference.
Okay.
Usually most annoying hums either come from a hard drive that seems to be getting a little bit more scratchy or a fan that has, you know, got some heavy dust on it and
sure.
vibrating a little differently.
Do you want to take a listen to it?
I don't know if we've got some hum, you know, here in the studio. It might be kind of hard to...
Okay, but
I think I can kind of hear something in the background, though, that sounds like almost like a low-level clicking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It hums and then sort of clicks. Very irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would try switching it out.
Okay.
A mouse, just make it, you know, if it's a USB port mouse or, you know, the one that's dedicated on the back of your computer next to the keyboard port, you know, just take a look at that and make sure that, you know, when you pick up one, they're... You can get them on sale sometimes for $5.
Sure.
Definitely within $10, $15. And it's actually not a bad thing. I have a lot of extras at home from various levels of complaints to, you know, the ball isn't working, which is an older mouse, to, mm-hmm. you know, the I don't like the wireless anymore, get me, you know, hardwire and stuff like that. So it's not a bad thing to have a spare one for. And even a keyboard, because keyboards do break too. Yep. They take the most abuse, you know, with their hands. So yep, not a bad thing to have either.
Good luck. Thanks, Bell, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers and software now with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Marge in Menominee Falls has been waiting a while, so let's go to Marge. Hi, Marge.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, we're thinking of getting Grandma a computer, and she's been showing a lot of interest, and I'm wondering what would be a good base to start at as far as what is needed on there.
What do you think? Does she have any interest in, have you worked with her on your computer? Have you shown her around? Or
No, just I would say more information and then office.
Mm-hmm. Office things too?
And then internet, yes.
So is she still active doing some work or?
No, but she does her own bills and okay, accounting stuff for her own house and that type
okay
of thing.
Okay. You know, now this is not something you're going to kind of surprise her with and then just leave her abandoned, are you?
No.
Say, here you go. See you later.
It's in the box. Take it out. Put it together. Away you go. Oh, man.
There's a lot, you know, in terms of costs and what you can get for your dollar. There's a lot of options between, I'd say, $300 to, you know, $1,000, depending upon rebates and brands and manufacturers that you look at. Probably, I would consider highly looking at some of the entry-level Macs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as the bookkeeping stuff, a lot of needs are met by programs like Intuit's Quicken and their TurboTax is their add-on for doing taxes, which is really, to me, I would say cookbook. Wouldn't you, Larry?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, even this year, the version is answer these questions and then we'll take you to the spots to fill in the numbers. But the entry-level systems from the Mac work well. The antivirus stuff is not going to be as much of an issue in terms of the Windows environment. And, it'll have word processor for her to use. Pictures, digital pictures, she'll probably have a blast with.
Less chance of running into virus issues with a Mac.
Yeah, it's... it's a good user-friendly system. The Windows Vista systems, and also memory-wise, probably at least a gig of RAM.
Okay.
If not, if you can afford to. But, on a Mac, you're going to be okay with one. On a Windows system, you're probably going to want to look at least two. And I've noticed that in a lot of cases now, they're putting in two, three, and even four on the systems that they're selling. In terms of a screen, I would say at a minimum, I'd hesitate to even say 17-inch. I'd really, the 19-inch flat screens, even last year there were deals where you could, if you pay attention, you can pick stuff up for under $150 for a nice 19-inch flat screen.
Okay.
Which is going to be very vibrant, and she'll enjoy tremendously, looking at pictures and stuff like that. In terms of where you live and internet access, my general comment about that is if you can afford, or if she's going to be paying for this and they can afford to do broadband or high-speed internet, that's going to be the most enjoyable. If you have to go with, like a dial-in connection, it's not like an instant on where you click and you go. There's going to be some connectivity things to get through versus the broadband, which is basically on all the time. And when you launch your browser, go check your email. Unless there are some problems, you're generally going to have access, not 100% of the time, but, pretty close. And okay. it'll be less frustrating when she tries to, especially a first-time user, you know, your tendency is to click, you know, how come it ain't working? This is broken.
Right.
Whereas you have something that's more responsive, then the tendency is to learn it a little quicker and not get as frustrated or saying,
right.
Why is this taking so long? So,
okay.
And then as far as the printer, you know, for $100, you can get a multifunction printer that's a scanner, a copier, a color printer that satisfies the needs of almost everybody out there. And the biggest thing that I find with the older age group that has no experience with computers is the fact that they tend not to use the printer. So you install this new printer, and you got ink cartridges in it, and then they don't use it, and then they go to use it, and they're dried out. And they go, why?
Okay.
So what I do in that case is before you set up the printer, you know, let them have some time on the computer and almost ask for when they want to start to print. Because then you know they're interested in using it. If you hook it up and then they don't really use it, then you're going to get confronted with trying to troubleshoot why isn't it printing. And,
okay.
You know, ink cartridges aren't that, they're not cheap.
Right.
So that's the manufacturer's annuity for you to buy into their game plan. So just a little, you know, word of advice about the printer stuff. Almost make it so that they... or maybe let them choose it, you know, you know, to fit their needs. So,
mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Have fun with it. The shopping part is the biggest part of the journey.
Yeah. Good luck, Marge. Thanks for calling. All right. Rosie in Belmont. It's your turn. Hi, Rosie.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have XP, Windows XP, and we're on DSL. And I was having so much trouble with Microsoft Live OneCare that I did not want to renew it.
Right.
And it's just expired. And I bought the AdAware Plus. Now, do you think that will be enough? And I have SpyBot.
Okay.
But do you think that will be enough, or should I have a higher, I don't know, higher priced program, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
What do you have for antivirus on your system?
Well, that's it. That's what I'm saying. All I have now is the AdAware Plus and the SpyBot.
Okay. You should also have MS Defender, which is part of it. You can install it's free to XP users.
Okay.
And it's called MS Defender.
Okay.
And it's also built into Vista for people that own Vista. It's part of it. The antivirus stuff, you should probably consider installing something like, there are free programs out there like AVG or Avast or Bitdefender. The ones that you typically see for sale in the store, McAfee or Norton. What I find is a tendency with those, aside from being targets for people that write these worms or viruses, are they're almost... too controlling on your system and get in the way when you try to actually just do some simple things on your computer. And if you're not savvy about what it's asking you and you answer the question the wrong way, it gets to be a real headache to try to undo those things versus these other programs are fairly straightforward to download, install, and the default settings themselves are usually right on for most people.
Okay.
If you go to the InfoStar Virus Info Center page, I have links under AV Help to all of those.
Okay.
So there's probably like, I'm going to say 2 to 3 dozen of those antivirus programs out there that you could actually evaluate on your own. So you could probably do a free one each month for a couple of years and still have coverage. But the ones I mentioned, and ClamWin is another one, which is like a project where programmers participate, and it's for free. The only catch with the ClamWin product is it's more of a pull environment in that you have to actively – it'll tell you that there's a downloaded version that you need to update to, but you have to actively go and get it versus something like an AVG, Avast, or Bitdefender will tell you there's an update, but will also get it for you and install it for you.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, it doesn't require really any work on your part versus you having to go get something and keep you know, being prompted along to do to act on something.
Okay.
All right.
But, yeah. Now, I have one other problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Visionaire
scanner?
Scanner.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't use it with 98, and now I want to install it on my XP, and it won't install. And
I could tell you why.
Yeah.
You probably, I'm pretty sure Visionaire is still a manufacturer. What you need to do is go to their website.
I have done that.
Okay, and you need to locate your scanner and your, you know, for Windows XP, the installation software. So you actually have to download new software to install it on XP.
Okay, well, they made me, the first time I did that, they made me buy a disk.
Hmm.
And that didn't help one bit. So maybe if I try it this other way, I've tried it twice.
Because usually when you have a manufacturer's product, if they've made it compatible for the next level or upgraded version of the operating system that you're using, they'll allow you through their support links to download either device drivers or software, you know, to make it compatible with what you're using.
Right.
So they shouldn't have made you, but they really shouldn't have made you buy a disk because that's pretty rare.
Well, I already had one anyway.
Right. Right.
No.
So I would
go back
look
to them.
Yeah, I would go back to their website and look under their support links and look to see if you can download the latest version of their software for XP. And that should work. Make sure it's plugged in and turned on. Because I remember my first experience when they came out with these flatbed scanners, installing the software, and I didn't have the scanner turned on.
Oh.
And no one, it didn't say anywhere in the instructions that you needed to do that in order for it to be recognized. That was probably about 20 years ago.
All right, Rosie, good luck. Thank you for calling. Hand on to Brian in Milwaukee. Brian, hello.
Hello. I, too, just bought a new computer system, and I had an old UMAX Astra 1200 scanner, and I'm told by the person that put the system together for me that it's not compatible. And I went to the website, and I can't really find any information to help me out. So I'm wondering, is he right that this is not compatible with Windows XP?
How old is the scanner?
It's pretty old. It's about 10 years old. But
yeah, you know, I would... Here's the other thing. There's another part of the scanner installation. Usually when you plug in a device into Windows X, at least XP or beyond, it will, you know, prompt you that you've got new hardware attached and, you know, go through the installation and that you need the software to help you do that. The other kicker is that the new scanners that are out there, I haven't checked recently, but I know over a year ago you could buy a new scanner, and if you looked with rebates, you could probably get one for $25 that's got an incredible, you know, in terms of resolution and the free software that's included with it, you know, for photo editing and scanning in documents and converting them from, you know, scanned documents to Word or Adobe Acrobat. I mean, for $25, $50, you get the scanner, you get the software, you get the cable, and you get compatibility.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of support because you're probably buying something that's from a manufacturer that's still around. Your problem might be that the manufacturer is no longer either supporting that scanner or it's just not worth their while because, like I said, $25, $50, you're buying
a new one.
You know, you're buying current technology. And we've said this before, we're, you know, it's a throwaway, you know, industry.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there are some companies that recycle this stuff, but a scanner might not really have much to recycle other than if it's dismantled and the plastic is, you know, taken off. So
Good luck. Thank you very much
for
calling.
That would be my best suggestion for that.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you, Brian. John in Germantown, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Oh, good, good. You're speaking of virus software and things of this sort. I have to tell you the story, then I have a quick question. Somebody I know called me and said her computer was becoming very slow. She's not from America. And I went over to her house, and her daughter was there. And it's one of those situations where the daughter's there half the time. And I went online, and she has cable internet, and she doesn't use her cable email. She's using another email. By the time I got through, fortunately, somebody had put a pre-release version of Norton 2007, which dug up 37 viruses, Trojans, just all kinds of junk. I cleaned that out. I did a disk clean, which took an hour, a disk defrag, which took another hour. I loaded up SpyBot, and it promptly immunized for about 60,000 different websites, of which over 8,000 were on each one of her daughter's pages. Uh-huh. Her daughter had like 250 IP addresses. Final story is I went the next day. We bought Norton Internet Security 2008. My brother, who's an MCSE, is involved in a very large city. As a systems administrator, recommended that because mm-hmm. it had its firewall, et cetera, et cetera. I loaded that, made sure everything was cleaned up, loaded Adware, did that, and then I ran the security inspection and found that something had redirected the Windows update to an unknown location, cleaned that up, and then her daughter had some very weak passwords. Worked on those, kept on getting the bad ones. She gave me her her email account password, which wasn't the cable internet system, and we changed that. That didn't work. And then I said, "Do you have any other website?" She says, "Well, I have a MySpace account." I said, "What's your password there?" And her mother's standing there, and all of a sudden it was like, "You're in the headlights." And the bottom line was that she went online. We're sitting there watching, and for some reason she just could not get that password to work. So I said, "Well, what we're going to do is we're going to disable that password on this system, and when you go to your dad's house, you'll have to work with him to get that straightened out." Now, I got her internet, her cable internet, cable Outlook email working, and she had a number of messages from her cable internet provider saying that it had several complaints about her system being used to send out mass quantities of spam and other things.
Yeah, it was hijacked.
Oh, yeah, and she was hijacked. And so I cleaned it all up. We sent the cable internet company a couple of emails saying what we had done, and it was working fine, became very fast after that. When I first started, I tried to download an AVG, and it kept on bouncing me to a spam page. So I was fortunate that somebody loaded this 2007 pre-release on it. So they got it all cleaned up. I told her mother, call the cable internet company, make sure everything's okay. It might not be, because my brother said there might be other things buried there. You might have to totally rebuild your system. So this is a word to the wise for parents who don't know what their children are doing on the internet, yeah, or who don't know much about their systems. They've got to be extremely careful and make sure she didn't have any antivirus software on her system.
No.
So it was really, really something. So my question to Peter is this. Having done all these things, SpyBot, Adware, 2008 antivirus, 2008 internet security, cleaning everything up. I went in, I set her mother up as the administrator and the with her own password. Then I made the master administrator a totally separate password, very secure with a lot of upper lowercase letters and characters and numbers. And I kept that one for her mother's sake. And just wanted to find out, I cleaned up all the files, separated the files, gave them their own web, their own pages to log on. It's an XP system. And I'm wondering, are we out of the woods yet, do you think? Or is there a possibility there's other things buried there? It's an XP system.
Yeah, I would say you with as many problems as you had and without not having it redone, I would say it's probably still something you got to be cautious and careful with.
Right.
Okay. I would really stay on top of it in the next 60 days because you haven't been there where, you know, she's left a trail of all her paths plus all the paths that have been taken on her behalf by somebody else, you know, because it's been hijacked. I've had systems where they've had over 10,000 occurrences of Trojans, virus hijackers, and so forth, to the point where it's like, you know, this has to be redone. And I can't even salvage your data files because it's so bad. Is there anything useful or worthwhile that you really need? You know, we'll try, but it's got to be isolated for, you know, a period of time. So I would say the next 60 days is pretty critical. And, you know, like you mentioned, what happens when they went to, I believe you said AVG, you know, and then you were turned over to a spam page or something like that. What happens is they're trying to prevent you from doing what you want to do. And the real harmful ones, once they catch on that you're after them, will make it, your system die a painful, slow death, because they will start to work on the Windows environment. So in your case, it sounds like you were actually fairly lucky that there wasn't one that was malicious and destructive to pull the legs out from under you and say, I'm not going to give you access to anything, and you're not going to use your computer anymore because I don't want you to, because you're trying to get rid of me, and this is how I do my bad things to you.
It wouldn't let me get into Windows Firewall, and then when I tried to do Windows Update, it wouldn't let me get into there.
Yeah, but you could still get on the internet and do things like that. What happens with the malicious ones is they cut off your internet access, and then they cut off access to actually using Windows to do anything useful with it, because you think it acts broken. So you were lucky in that you were able to still get access to getting rid of things. So
I was also lucky in that I have a brother that's an MCSE and has all his security credentials and everything else, and working with him over the phone, was able to get a lot of things cleared up and get her mother in there as the administrator to kind of oversee things. Because the fortunate thing, it wasn't XP Home, it was XP Professional. It came from a corporation that the lady's ex-husband used to work for. So we went and we had to shut down NetWare, NT, just all kinds of stuff. There is so much garbage in that thing. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So I'd say, you know, keep your phone handy for, you know, she might be calling you in the next, or to let her know, you know.
Keep an eye.
And you might want to pay another visit or two just to check up and make sure things are still clean.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks a lot, John, for that story. That's a scary story, but unfortunately, I'm sure there are many other people out there just like your friend.
Yep.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Jeremy in Green Bay has a question. Jeremy, hi.
Hello. Hi. I have a question about RAID drivers. I just got a computer yesterday. It's got 720 gig hard drive.
Yep.
And it's RAID ready.
Right.
And it's a Intel Core 2 quad. And I'm wondering with the RAID 0, if it's going to matter with the speed of, you know, opening files or anything with a processor that's that fast.
I don't see that as a problem. You could probably go out on the discussion groups with your specs and you know, see if there are any issues or concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I link to a lot of tech forums that'll, you know, give you answers to that stuff on the Virus Info Center page at the very top. You'll find a list for forums, and you might want to go to like MCSE and Gurus and you might want to go to the MS News Groups. I have it listed as MSN Groups.
Okay.
But they're all those forums are excellent for looking for help. Do you have a floppy drive for your system? A 1.44?
No.
Unless they've changed that in the last, I'd probably say 12 months, that's the one use for the RAID is a floppy drive. For the installation. I haven't done one in the last 12 months, but I, you know, that was why you need a 1.44 floppy drive is you actually create the RAID drivers,
yeah,
and then it gets them off of that drive. It's okay. Kind of weird, but that's how it's done.
All right.
And then, you know, you have to go through, when you're turning on RAID, you also need to turn it on through your the system BIOS.
Okay.
So you need to turn it on through that as well as you're going to do it through the installation of the operating system.
Somebody may be wondering what RAID is.
RAID is an acronym for, I forget the exact, maybe our caller could, do you know what the acronym stands for?
Redundant array of independent disks.
There you go. And what it is, it's in a simple sense, it's mirroring or copying at the same time a file that's written on drive one to drive two. So it's a mirror image of it, or mm-hmm. a quick ghosting. It could be, you know, if loosely it could be called another term. So it's an exact copy. So when a data file is written on drive one, it's also written on drive two. What I use, and it's essentially a form of a quick backup, is really what it's doing. What actually I like in the place of that, I considered using RAID, but I decided to use what's called a network attached storage device, or an NAS, and you can install a client. And we've talked about this before. You can install the client or the software on each workstation, and it's attached through network cabling and a hub or a switch, and it basically backs up the data files whenever they change. So yeah, it's,
I have an external hard drive mm-hmm. that, you know, you just press a button and it's supposed to back up everything.
Right.
So, you know, as far as the extra storage or, mm-hmm. you know, as far as loss of data, I'm not too worried about that.
Right, right.
But I know what the RAID 0 is more of a, you know, it copies it to two locations,
right.
but it's in segments and stuff, so mm-hmm. it's supposed to be faster.
Right.
I was wondering if it just made a difference with the processors
yeah.
that are out.
One thing I would highly recommend, since it doesn't sound like you have any experience with it, is to actually, you know, play with it and try it. And what I mean with that is have your system case open,
mm-hmm.
and after you get this thing installed, you know, test it and unplug one of the drives,
okay.
you know, and understand how to bring your system back up with the, you know, the other drive, which is essentially part of the RAID.
Okay.
So if I do
go to RAID, it mm-hmm. will go back to standard if I wanted it to?
Well, it or? Will. You can get it to work as the, in other words, let's say the primary drive fails, mm-hmm. and that's why we do this. The primary drive fails, so the second drive in the RAID now is really the primary system because you still want to use your computer. You need to understand how you're going to be confronted with bringing it up, because the operating system, you know, all of a sudden things change. The RAID is no longer there because one of the physical drives is no longer working.
Mm-hmm.
So Windows is going to have some different prompts for you in order to bring your system up.
Okay.
So just mm-hmm. understand, you know, you should. It's almost like going through a trial run of your disaster plan.
Yeah.
You're putting in RAID for your disaster plan, so you should work it, you know, work the scenario before you fully, you know, say, okay, I'm RAID protected. So what happens when it goes down, you should understand and take notes on how to deal with it when it goes down.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Good luck. Thanks,
yep.
Jeremy. Adam in New Holstein, your turn. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm running a Windows XP system, and I have... It's a broadband connection. It's wireless to my house, and then it's wired in the house.
Okay.
And I recently updated to a wireless network in both. And I run wireless in the house. It runs web pages open really slow. Some are fast, and others are really, really slow. If I go back to where I'm wired directly to the computer from the modem, then everything's like it always was, really fast. Do you have any ideas what's causing my slowdown?
Hmm.
So you're wireless to your house.
I'm wireless to my house.
And you had it hardwired, and then you switched to wireless.
Yeah, I wanted to move the computer to a different room.
Right.
What I wanted to do.
And some pages load faster when they're hardwired versus wireless.
Well, yeah, when I'm wired from my computer with a network direct to my modem,
mm-hmm.
it runs, everything is super fast.
Super fast.
When I go, it's really fast. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. you click on it, it's there.
Mm-hmm.
When I go wireless, certain pages are really fast and other pages are really slow to the point that they don't even load sometimes.
And that's pretty consistent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. That is just unusual.
Yeah.
You would think that.
That's what I've been told. It's unusual.
Yeah. I would, see if there, in terms of your wireless router, maybe there are some settings you could change. I would probably contact the manufacturer.
Uh-huh.
And, you could, I don't know if is it D-Link or Linksys or.
It's a Linksys.
Yeah. Linksys and D-Link, I've had pretty good luck calling, and Netgear calling into their tech support and talking with pretty knowledgeable tech people there.
Uh-huh.
You could either, just take an initial approach of, emailing them from their tech page.
Sure.
But they're available 24/7 via an 800 number. If you got time, I would, give them a call, and they might have you try troubleshooting and doing some different things.
Okay.
All right.
One other quick question. I just downloaded AVG, their free version, and it's telling me that the email scanner is not fully functional. Is that not a functional thing in the free version, or is there something I did wrong?
I don't know if they've changed that, but, have you looked through all the preferences and settings?
Yeah, everything I can find, and I can't find it, and it says to turn the email scanner on or off or what.
I would probably, The more detailed information is probably going to come from their website.
Okay.
They usually have what the difference is between the free and the fully functional, the commercial one. Because I don't remember all the specific details on that stuff.
Yeah.
At least not right now, I don't.
Good luck. Thanks for calling.
That's where it's going to be.
Bob in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah.
See, I have a Dell circa 2003 and with the XP, and it came loaded with WordPerfect and the productivity pack, and I was retired and I was so well versed on Word, on Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel, I wanted to use those,
right.
So I must have had some Office disks at one time, and I put them in and custom loaded. I got rid of the WordPerfect and custom loaded the Excel and the Word. Now, when I'm working on Excel or something, it's not unusual if I'm trying to open a file, I get a message on the screen to insert my CD. And it keeps talking about a 2000 space SR-1. And I don't know what they're talking about.
The SR-1 is a service release, version 1. And so when you're trying to open a certain file, it's giving you that message.
Mm-hmm.
The SR1 is it's a service release that fixes certain problems or flaws or bugs with the Microsoft Office products, and it's available for you can download it from the Microsoft website. And what they typically do is they have you take the original Microsoft Office CD, and as part of the installation, they have you insert that to validate the copy that you're updating.
Mm-hmm.
So there must be something on the files that you're clicking that's triggering that it needs this update, the service release 1, or SR1.
SR1, yeah.
Yeah. So the way to find that, there, if you were to do a search for Microsoft Office updates,
mm-hmm.
You would probably be there would be probably a link that would take you to the Microsoft Office homepage where you could click on getting the SR1 update.
Ouch! See, I don't know where that Office disks or whatever it is. Because I'm not a guru with computers, and I just was so used to Word and Excel.
Does the Word and the Excel still work on your system?
Yes.
Yeah. The other option is to just ignore it.
But there's some things I want to load, and it doesn't seem to want to load for me.
Yeah, that's why it's asking for that fix.
Well, how can I put that word perfect productivity back in and then just start from scratch? And forget what I got on Excel. I don't have a whole lot on there.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably could. I mean, the word perfect compatibility between and the Office products, you might be better off downloading some of the compatible Microsoft Office products and even the web-based, Google has, and there are a couple other products out there that actually mimic what the Microsoft Office products do and have and use those instead.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, Bob. Thanks very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. Pete, you always have a top 10 list of things for us, and what have you got today?
I'm not going to let you down, Larry, so here we go. They're all located, if you can go to infostar.com and either click on the current top 10 or the archives and just scroll down to today's date, they're all there. This first one is an excellent resource if you're looking for anything about automobiles, from concept cars to production vehicles. It's called Concept Cars, but with a Z. .com, and anything you can think of, it'll be there, except the only thing I couldn't find was the air car, because I think of how it's licensed and not manufactured by that company. The next one might be helpful for those that are looking for some tax resources online. It's called taxalmanac.org, and I also put a link up to IRS because, they're the ones that write the rules.
Yeah.
And they got a lot of rules, and they're all there online. So this next one has become my new weather favorite. And you get access to real-time weather reports, weather cams, forecasts, all utilizing Google Maps. And it's called WeatherBonk, BONK.com. And they've got some other sister sites. One is for skiing, another one for camp. And the last one, which I kind of piqued your interest, Larry, was golf.
Yes.
Golfbonk.com. They've got aerial views of golf courses. So if you're traveling, that might be fun to look at. This next one is a Microsoft beta version of a web browser plugin for what they consider their next generation of multimedia experiences online. So it's available for Internet Explorer and for Mozilla, Firefox, and so forth, and it's called silverlight.net. So silverlight, one word, .net. This next one, my daughter showed me, and I went to it, and I was kind of, it looked kind of interesting because it's basically an almost entirely black screen. And I'm like, what the heck could this be? And I read about the about part, in terms of the screen, and it's a search engine that ties in with Google, but their claim is in terms of that because it's black because we're saving energy. And I like the concept, but as they kind of allude to and they're about, we're probably not saving that much energy.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of a neat reminder, that everyone can play their part, in going green and saving energy. And it's called Blackle, BLACKLE.com. Number six is for people that work with what used to be called Micromedia Flash, is now Adobe Flash Media, and this website is for those people that do that kind of work. It's called FlashComGuru.com, and they probably already know about it, but it's a neat site to see these different multimedia experiences and how they just continually evolve to the next level, just like what Silverlight is. I don't know about snowmobiling today in this kind of weather. It's maybe tomorrow will be a better day, but this next resource is for snowmobilers. It's a snowmobile trail and travel guide for U.S. and Canada, and it's called snowtracks.com. And then a new movie review and preview and industry-related news site is called themovieinsider.com, so it's all one word. And then a joint project of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and a number of key universities like Harvard, Berkeley, and so forth. It's called chillingeffects.org, and it's basically, do you know your online rights? And this helps, you know, work with you to understand what those are. And then for people that are 50 and over, if you're, you know, looking for job, they call them retirement jobs, but I don't feel that way, Larry. It's called retirementjobs.com, and it's just a resource, to, you know, for that age group. And I've got links to some free online video tutorial sites and the link to the Windows XP Service Pack 3, which I had a couple of people email me. We mentioned it last time. Actually cured some ills on their system. So
good enough.
It basically, what it does is it looks at your system, and they're telling you that, you know, the responsibility for you is to back up your system, back up your data. They're making it available, and it will look at it and put any fixes on that you've missed in terms of trying to keep it up to date with Service Pack 1, Service Pack 2. And for some people it worked, so it might be worth some
extra to
take a look at.
You bet. Well, and then just go to infostar.com if you want to see that whole list. If you didn't get it all written down, it's right there. Paul in Grafton has a question for you, Pete. Let's go there. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Good afternoon. I'm hoping you can help me cure one of the so-called improvements to Windows Vista. And essentially, the situation is this. I have an office with three computers in it, in my network. I am the only user on any of the three, so there's only one user account, which means I'm the administrator in each of the three. And I had it set up so that any disk on any machine could be accessed from any other machine. Recently, my laptop died, and I had to replace it, and made the mistake of replacing it with one that's based on Windows Vista. And I tried to recreate the setup that I had where I could access every drive from every other machine, and I can access my other two machines from the Vista-based laptop, but if I go to the other two computers and try and access the laptop, I'm told I don't have authority to do that. I need to contact my administrator.
So talk to yourself and...
Right. And just so you know, on the Vista machine, both drives are set to be shared, and in permissions, I've even gone as far as setting everyone has full permission, and it still won't let me on.
Hmm. That's an unusual one.
Yeah. I know sometimes I've had problems sharing between different versions of Windows. I haven't tried that one yet. What I would probably do is do some Google searches on shared access to Vista Drive, you know, Windows Vista Drive, and see what you might have to play a little bit with, you know, what you're putting in for searches. Another resource you might want to go to is annoyances.org. And that's also a link that I put up on the Virus Info Center page at the top, where it says forums. Mm-hmm. Annoyances is, I think it's the first one up there. They might have some, suggestions in terms of getting by that.
Okay.
But I know sometimes Windows, in their interaction between different versions can be a little dicey, and there might be another thing that you have to fine-tune in order to get that to work.
Well, speak of annoyances, in fact, you'll get a kick out of this one. When I do backups, like I said, from the Vista machine, I can access any other network drive, including the drive I typically do my backups to.
Right.
But if I use Windows Vista Backup Utility to do a backup, when it asks me to select a drive and I pick the network drive where I do my backups,
it won't let you to.
It tells me I don't have access to that drive. Even though if I use Windows Explorer, I can write files to that drive, I can pull files off that drive, but when I go to backup, I don't have access to it.
That's illogical.
Yes, to say the least.
Yeah.
Which is what reminded me when you talked about annoyances.
Right. I believe, I'm not sure if it's come out yet, if there's a service pack for Vista. I went to Badger State games this week, and I think I was a little pressed for time, I'm trying to remember if I heard something about that on Friday, or one of my emails that it's either coming out or has been released. You know, in terms of a Vista update to fix maybe these annoyances.
I'll take a look, but yeah. Based on my 2 weeks experience with Vista, it's going to be a huge service pack.
All right, good luck, Paul. Jerry in Dakota, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, hi, Larry and Peter. Service Pack 1, I get a bunch of computer newsletters, and Service Pack 1 is supposed to be coming out sometime this month. So
yeah, oh. I remember, and I was like, why don't I have a link to it and the stuff that I put up, and that was probably why.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have four questions for you, Peter. They're all related to, Microsoft Update. The first one is I've got a Creative Sound, these are both optional hardware updates. And the first one is Creative Sound, Creative Audio Processor Update. And it has a... I've tried to put it in, and it's been downloaded into the computer, but it will not install. And I was wondering about that. And then there's another one. You want to talk about that one first?
You said it won't install, so what actually happens? Does it
come? It just stops. It just won't install, and it goes on to the next update that's there or whatever, if I want to. So.
Yeah, there might be. For a reason for something that won't install is there might be a conflict that exists, so kind of like a roadblock that is getting in its way, and that may be related to some other issue either with Windows or with another manufacturer's product, hardware product that's on your system, and it's just creating a roadblock. You're going to have to probably... go to Creative Labs or maybe even do some searches and use the upgrade name or version, if you have some letters, numbers, and whatever, to do some searches on it to get some more detailed information.
Sure. Well, the computer seems to be working just fine without this install. So
you might be able to live without it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
But... now, this other one that I've got, it's from NVIDIA. It's an NVIDIA.
Right, which is the video card.
Update. I'm afraid of this one because when I got, the computer's about 4 years old, something like that.
Okay.
And this update, it just came in like last year sometime. And the thing is, it was released, the update was released July 28th of 2003. Now, why would that all of a sudden pop up, two, 3 years after I had the computer in it?
Right.
It just doesn't make sense. So I'm leery about putting
that. What I would do is I would ignore that, and if you really want to do the update on the NVIDIA, is, know what you have in your system and actually visit the NVIDIA website. And download their most current driver. It'll detail for you what their most current software and drivers are available for your system, and then you can download those. That's what I would do with that.
Then you mentioned just a little bit ago about Microsoft Silverlight. I just went into my Microsoft update today. Went to the site and that's one of the updates that is available, an optional update, software update for me.
Right.
And is that, I don't really understand that too well. Is that worth putting on? You mentioned it, so apparently is okay.
Well, what's going on with that is it's in beta version, which means that they're testing it. And what they're trying to do is generate interest and popularity and masses to get involved for what they are considering, their... multimedia experiences, in other words, like an Adobe Flash kind of product. Uh-huh. And when you go to visit them, sometimes they'll prompt you and say, would you like to participate in the Silverlight beta? So what I did was just to make people aware that it's out there, and there are applications that have been created on different websites, and the links that I put up just simply, you know, show you what they're trying to do with it. Is it required? Absolutely not. There might be some websites that are trying to use it and that are trying to promote it themselves, but it's not a required download or plug-in that you must have.
Okay.
Sure. Then I got one more question here, if it's real quick. This will be on root certificates update. I'm kind of leery on that one, too. Are you familiar with the root certificate update?
Root certificate update.
It's Microsoft. I'll read it here for you if you want me to read it.
Yeah, why don't you quickly read it?
Sure. This item updates the list root certificates on your computer to the latest list that is accepted by Microsoft as part of the Microsoft Root Certificate Program. Adding additional root certificates to your computer enables the use of extended validation certificates in Internet Explorer 7, a great range of security-enhanced web browsing, encrypted email, and security-enhanced code delivery.
Hmm. Have you seen that, Larry?
No, I have no idea.
Yeah, that might be something like new, like just coming out. Is this something that you've seen, like a week ago?
This has been here for a while. So it's been here for about a month, I think. I get it online.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I would just do a search and see, what the meaning of that one is.
Go from there.
Good luck. If I've seen that, I've scanned over it so quickly, and if it looked like it was a Microsoft valid, authentic thing for Microsoft, then I probably invoked it and said okay. But I don't remember seeing that one.
No. Thanks, Jerry. Good luck. Sue in Crystal Lake, Illinois. It's your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hello. Hi. Hopefully this will be something that can be fixed quickly. When I pull up a web page on one of our computers here at home and I click on something, the little finger that indicates that you can click on it,
right.
There appears a little circle next to it with a slash mark. And then when I click again, it tells me the web page is not available offline. So I go up to the Tools icon on the toolbar and notice that Work Offline has been checked. So I uncheck it and then go back and try to click on something on the web page, and it does it again. It just seems to, every time I click, it seems to automatically check Work Offline.
Now, is that just for that particular link, or are you seeing this for others?
I'm seeing this on any website that I can pull up and on any link on the website.
So it's almost like it's turning off your browsing after you go online.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's unusual. We're getting some unusual
We're getting some
calls.
Strange ones here.
Now, this used to happen infrequently, and now all of a sudden since last week, it happens all the time.
Now, are you using Internet Explorer?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have any other web browsers on your system?
Not on this particular computer.
Mm-hmm. I would recommend trying to see if you can download another web browser.
Okay.
Like Firefox,
okay.
Mozilla.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with doing something like that, but it's just a good thing to do.
Okay.
Because having two browsers on your system allows you to kind of check between the two of them in terms of problems.
Okay.
And I would install Firefox and see if you're having the same kind of problems. Hopefully not.
Okay.
And then I would probably do a search and see if you can get some results on browser goes offline with links. Just type in some variations of that and see if there's some settings that you might have checked on, or maybe an update that you're missing.
Okay.
Or in the instance that there might be something that's just trying to, get in on your system, and this is just kind of the beginning of trying to take control.
Yeah.
So, okay. So it might be an indication of a problem that might be more serious then.
That's correct. It could very well be. Because that's kind of like I would consider it almost like a security issue, in that it's not allowing you to do what you want to do.
Yep.
Okay.
And having that extra browser is definitely going to help you in the long run.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks, Sue. Michael in Madison, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, and good afternoon. I've got a question on Vista. How hard is it to install or change over to Microsoft Windows XP? Is it recommended? Or
you mean going back?
Yeah, going back.
So you change to Vista, and then you want to go back.
No, I have a friend that bought a new computer that has Vista running on it, and they're unhappy with it.
Well, couple of issues. One is unless you have a license to XP, you'll have to purchase a license to XP, and you'll have to redo the hard drive. You can't install on top of it because you can't move backwards. You have to undo it or basically start over from scratch. So other areas of concern are, number one, making sure you have backups of any data files that they need, pictures, if they've downloaded temporary internet, downloaded email and they're basically haven't saved pictures, they're going to have to know where they saved them instead of them being temporary internet files. That's one area that I find that usually a lot of people mess up on, is that they don't really know where they've saved them. The other issue is making sure that you've identified all the devices in the system. In other words, video cards, sound cards, anything that goes into that computer in terms of hardware options, you need to get the device drivers for Windows XP.
Because
you'll have them for Vista, but you won't have them backwards compatible to XP. And the easiest way to identify that is there's a utility called Belarc Advisor, Advisor. And you can do a search on that and download that and install it and then, have it do a printout and then just go and find all those device drivers that you're going to need. And then you'll be able to install XP on it. So it's not something you kind of blink your eye and it's done. You've got to do some research.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, and maybe an answer to your previous caller on Vista. Mm-hmm. I know that when we remote into other clients' computers that has it running, we need to turn off the user access control before we can send and transfer files or even do anything on the computer. So maybe that would help him out.
Yeah, that might be a good tip to try.
Yeah, something good to try.
Hopefully Annoyances has got the answer to that one, too.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for the program.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And just quickly, Roxanne called in and says she downloaded AVG free last Saturday. This is in response to an earlier caller.
Right.
And it included email scanning. So that was in response.
Yeah, I thought it was there, but, like I said, I don't have all those things memorized. And but, the best source is the manufacturer's pages, the owners of the products. They let you know.
Peter, thanks. You'll be back March 3rd.
Yep.
We'll do this all over again. Peter Green of thank you very much. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Take a look at his website at infostar.com. Lots of good information, things that we talked about today on the program, you'll find there. Coming up tomorrow at 11, Neil Shubin of the University of Chicago talks about Darwin Day, and he's the author of Your Inner Fish. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.